Good afternoon once again. This time I welcome you to a discussion on that important aspect of who we are, the budget. And to tackle that issue, we have an interesting panel of very talented and qualified personnel to tackle this issue, because that's one area I would comfortably say I don't know the dime from a penny. So allow me to introduce the experts. Leading us is the General Secretary for General Council on Finance and Administration and Treasurer to the General Conference, Moses Kumar. Accompanying him is the Deputy General Secretary Administration for the General Council on Finance and Administration, John Gusby. And also accompanying them is the Deputy General Secretary for Operations in the General Council on Finance Administration, the Reverend Pat Youngquest. So I turn it over to General Secretary Kumar.
Good afternoon. It's good to be here. Before I proceed, did you all get this? If you didn't get it, raise your hands. Our staff will come and give you this. If you don't have this, a couple of people don't have Sarah in this place. And there are some four people there don't have it also. Good afternoon. How are you all doing today? You had enough of information, or you still need some more? Some more. Wow, what an intelligent crowd. First of all, I wanted to commend you guys. You know, you're the cream of this United Methodist Church. You know, you've been coming here. You came here from Wednesday, Thursday, and they've been listening to us all along. This is a great task. I want to thank you that you could do this continuously. And I also want to thank you, the communicators who are here listening also. Probably that's their job, so they have to listen anyway. But you guys are here, so thank you so much to the communicators and also the delegates. I want to thank you and appreciate what you have been doing so far. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Reverend Larry Holland, UMCOM, to put this along with Tim. I think this is a tremendous opportunity for us to learn it. I think sometime we might be thanking them, but I want to thank you, Tim, and your crew, and all the tech groups around there. Why don't we give them a round of applause for the great work they are doing? Thank you, Tim. Convey our greetings to Larry, too. Thank you for his hard work on that. I also wanted, in the same theme of thanking you, how many of you know about apportionment? Wow, everybody knows about apportionment. That's great. Well, today is the last day of sending the check to GCFA, in case you don't know that. You know, my good friend Jim Allen brought the iPhone. Is it iPhone or BlackBerry?
BlackBerry.
It's BlackBerry, sorry. And he showed the picture that one of his staff went to my office and gave the check. That is a great term. Thank you so much for the enthusiasm that you are all doing that. More importantly, it's not about the money that I'm going to talk about. It's about the mission that you're trying to fulfill by giving this dollars. Because great ministries cannot be done because of the support, without your support for the apportionment. As of Tuesday when I came here, we already had several annual conferences have paid 100% already. I don't want to read the list because sometimes I might miss out some of your annual conferences. Several of them have paid. When I walked in on Thursday, my dear friend Pat Morrison from Western Pennsylvania conference came to me. "Moses, I have a good news for you." I said, "What is that?" She said, "After 15 years, we paid 100% just now." I just wanted to thank you, Pat. Thank Bishop Bickerton for taking the lead on this. And thank you all for your faithful contribution. It means a lot more to people in the Philippines, in Africa, and all over the place. So I want to thank you for that. Now let me go to the script that they asked me to speak. During this presentation today, we will be covering three basic topics. First, I'd like to share a little bit about GCFA, then explain the budget. Pat will do that. Then we will highlight some of the legislation that GCFA is going to move forward. We want to make this easy and really understandable to you, the budget process and the budget to you all. End of the time, you can ask the question to our dear brother Maystone, and he will answer the question. That's the intention. We want to make it as simple as possible that so that everybody can understand this. What does GCFA do anyway? As our name suggests, the General Council of Finance and Administration serves the church through the financial and administrative ministries of the denomination. Although we are not in the work of providing direct programmatic work or missions, we do a great deal in providing back office support for the agencies, the bishops, and other denominational ministry as they provide important ministries to the church. GCFA is unique among the agency as we have an important role with our partners at the connectional table in providing leadership and oversight of the work of the church between sessions of the General Conference. While the connectional table provides programmatic oversight, GCFA is responsible for providing financial and administrative oversight of the agencies and other ministries of the General Church. We are also accountable to the General Conference for our work and report extensively each quadrennium on all matters relating to the receiving, dispersing, and reporting of all general apportionment funds. Prior to the General Conference, you will receive a volume of your daily Christian Advocate devoted solely for these reports. It is important to note as well that GCFA is the only organization or agency whose membership is elected entirely by the General Conference. We believe this clear line of sight between our agency and General Conference is an important part of how we establish our accountability to the General Conference for our work. How do we do this? We do this work through a number of different types of ministry. We collect all the monies given to the General Church, care for those as the trustees of the denomination, provide for their internal and external audit. We provide for the care and support of all active and retired bishops. We safeguard the legal interests of the denomination. We collect the official data of the denomination and provide to the agencies and researchers. We provide travel and meeting planning services for a number of agencies and annual conferences. We manage many of the investments of the denomination, and we work with affiliated organizations to provide promotion and support for planned giving through the United Methodist Church Foundation and insurance and risk management services through United Methodist Insurance. Needless to say, we do a great deal at GCFA, and a lot of it you probably don't care much about. We like to say that if we have done our job right, no one will know that we have done it at all. It is the sort of unglamorous work that stays out the spotlight, but we believe it's necessary and important work that makes the ministry happen. GCFA also provides a number of services to annual conferences to support you in your ministry. Our goal with the services is to help you enhance your administrative ministries while reducing the cost to accomplish them. There are many big and small ways that we do this work. I'd like to highlight three ministries that we have emerged in the past quadrennium. ESRA. ESRA is GCFA Integrated Data Management Solution that provides data collection, processing, and reporting services for key annual conference data, including clergy, appointment, local church, leadership, statistics. Currently, 37 conferences use ESRA to collect their local church statistics and the number of the conferences using our appointments and leadership databases grows by the month. GCFA offers a system and support for online annual conference registrations, which allows you to handle participant registrations and transaction for conference and camps at greatly reduced cost. Finally, this month, we launched an innovative online weekly statistics dashboard called Vital Signs that is part of our support of the Vital Congregations movement. The system currently collects numerical and narrative data on over 5,000 congregations or over 15% of our United Methodist churches in the U.S. All the services are offered to your annual conference at no additional cost, thanks to your generous contribution towards the General Administration Fund. For more information on this, please talk to one of our staff at the GCFA booth. You know, in some of the earlier speeches, several people were talking about duplication of work and all of those things. I want to address this today because we have moved a long way now of sharing ministries together and reducing, duplication in our agencies. So I want to address this now. GCFA is engaged in a great deal of activity related to the sharing administrative services. Historically, GCFA has provided creek services to other agencies, receiving apportioned funds, including payroll and employee benefits, administration of all agency staff, check writing for all but one of the agencies, and investment management. So earlier on, somebody said that, you know, accounting is done all over the place, and so that is the centralized location we do things. So I just want to keep you aware about that. This quaternium, we have greatly increased the amount of services shared with our ministry partners at the other general agencies. We now share among many, or in some cases, all the agencies' meeting planning and travel services, service contracts to increase purchasing power and reduce cost. We share a chief technology officer with the General Board of Higher Education and Ministry, General Board of Discipleship. We are sharing integrated business application to reduce software cost and programs like Great Plains. We offer a wellness program to all agency employees. We provide day-to-day financial services for the General Commission on Archives and History. And we are working with our partners in agencies and annual conferences to establish and improve data exchange and business process with a goal of one day ensuring that every piece of data reported by a church or an annual conference is reported only once. That's our goal, and we are very close to that. I want to invite John to talk some more about this.
Good afternoon. You don't have to read all of the verbiage on this, but paragraph 806.1 of the Book of Discipline establishes the mandate of GCFA to present a budget for the General Church to the General Conference. That's our biggest job at the General Conference. We're going to talk a little bit about the financial state of the church, the budget process, and then show you the budget that's proposed for the next quadrennium. Amidst all the worry and uncertainty, we are a people of faith, and praise God, our local churches report that conditions are not as dire as the news might sometimes suggest. Although times are not easy, a survey of local church pastors and leaders last year indicates that over 40% of our churches describe their financial health as good or excellent. Another third report that finances are tight, but we manage. Certainly there are congregations facing some serious financial challenges, but for the vast majority of our churches, conditions may not be ideal, but they are manageable. It's interesting to note as well that most churches facing significant financial difficulty were in the same difficulty 5 years ago. Although there are 8% fewer churches reporting their health as good, nearly 7% more report their health as excellent. Nevertheless, the recession has been a challenge, and churches have responded. In the same 2010 survey, pastors and other church leaders reported the biggest impacts were on staff salaries, church endowments, and savings, capital campaigns, building projects, and giving to mission. All levels of the connection have responded to the recession. Agencies cut staff, realigned ministries, and are increasingly sharing administrative services among themselves. Our data indicates that many of our annual conferences have also cut staff, realigned ministries, and reduced the number of districts. And our jurisdictional bishops responded by rolling back their salaries for 1 year. GCFA reported that in 2009, for the first time in our history, the denomination had over 13 million professing members worldwide. The fact is that globally, the United Methodist Church is growing. Thanks in part to the success of our annual conferences in Africa, the denomination has seen consistent growth over the last 8 years. At the 2010-2012 General Conference, for the first time in our history, nearly 40% of our delegates will come from outside the United States. The growth that we've seen in Africa and in the Philippines means that this General Conference will truly be a global gathering. At the same time, the annual conferences and the Central Conferences currently account for about 1% of total receipts on general funds apportionments. As a global denomination, our membership is growing, but our financial base is shrinking. Churches and conferences continue to give generously and consistently to the general fund apportionments. Even amidst the economic turmoil of 2009, the percentage paid on general fund apportionments only dipped to 84%. As you can see here, the share of local church spending going for general fund apportionments has decreased from 2.68% in 1996 to just over 2% in 2009. Looking at it from the conference perspective, we also see the decline. This chart shows that the percentage of all dollars received by annual conferences from local churches for all apportionments, for all causes, and direct billed pension and health benefits, relative to the funds that go on for the seven apportioned funds of the General Church. Since 1996, that percentage has also declined from 20% in 1996 to 15% in 2009. Reverend Pat Youngquist will now continue with our presentation.
Good afternoon. So let's talk about the budget. This quadrennium, GCFA established an economic advisory committee, which was charged with providing three economic scenarios for the agencies to consider in developing their next quadrennial budget and to recommend a bottom line. The agencies received those projections, developed three budgets with explanations of ministry impacts, and made presentations to a joint meeting of GCFA and the Connectional Table. GCFA and CT adopted a bottom line, established the distribution of funds to the agencies, and GCFA established the amount of funds going to the Episcopal and General Administration funds. With that, you and the other delegates will determine at the General Conference what the final budget will look like. After you've processed through the legislation with financial impacts, GCFA's council or board of directors will recommend a revised budget, which you will then consider, and then you will pass the final budget. As I mentioned, GCFA's Economic Advisory Committee is a new part of the process. They are charged with predicting the amount of funds that will be available for the work of the General Church through apportionments for the next quadrennium. Comprised of experts in economics, finance, and the United Methodist Church, they use sophisticated econometric models that have shown a high level of accuracy in predicting payouts over the last 20 years. In forming this committee, the intent was to create a group that can consider the financial capacity of the church, largely outside of the normal pressures that are a part of the budget process. Although other considerations need to be considered in developing the budget, the Economic Advisory Committee helps to ensure that the budget deliberations are built upon a sure financial footing based upon solid economic analysis. The goal of the EAC in its work was to determine total apportionments that encourage gently rising payouts at all levels of the connection and provide adequate support for needed ministries. Gently rising payouts are important not just because they support the work of the General Church, but because they improve the payouts for the conferences as well. A well-balanced approach helps to ensure the financial health not only of the General Church, but of annual conferences and the local church. The econometric modeling has historically been extremely accurate. Here I have a graph where you can see the actual payout of apportionments over the past 15 years. And here in the yellow is what our models predicted. The rate of accuracy, as you can see, is extremely high. To develop that prediction, the Economic Advisory Committee considers a number of variables related to the economy and to the state of the church. Using the combination of factors, the Economic Advisory Committee calculated its predictions. Our best prediction, which we're calling the realistic scenario there, is that of $603,100,000 for the 2013-16 quadrennium for use in the General Church. The high or optimistic prediction is $630,970,000, and the low is $567,790,000. The low case or pessimistic assumes that the economy will not recover fully, the base assumes a slow recovery, and the high predicts a more rapid recovery. Here is the comparison of the three scenarios to this quadrennial budget of $641 million. Due to the sluggish economy and the declining financial base in the United States, the three scenarios demonstrate significant decreases. It is important to note, however, that according to our most recent prediction, payout rates will increase in all three scenarios, and we anticipate both the optimistic and realistic scenarios will actually provide more income when compared to what was received this quadrennium. So when the membership of GCA and the connectional table got together and considered these three scenarios, they determined that the realistic case of $603,100,000 was our best option to balance the needs for ministry with the goal of increasing payout rates for all levels of the connection. So you may ask, well, why not go with that lower pessimistic rate? Decisions, of course, like this, any decisions have consequences. If the pessimistic case is chosen, but the economy does better than expected, we see unnecessary, severe budget cuts to important ministries. And if the high number were chosen, but economic conditions didn't improve as much as in a positive way, we could see significant increased financial pressures, particularly on annual conferences. So, $603,100,000 is the budget we propose to you. Here you can see how it's divided among the general funds in dollar terms. And here in percentage terms, as you can see, World Service gets roughly half of the apportioned budget proposed for the next quadrennium, with 17% going to the Ministerial Education Fund, 15% for the Episcopal Fund, which supports our bishops, 7% for the Black College Fund, 6% for General Administration, 2% for African University, and just under 1% for the Interdenominational Cooperation Fund. Here's how the fund budgets compare to the last quadrennium. As you can see, every fund sees a reduction, in most cases, 6.6%. However, in the case of the General Administration and Episcopal funds, the decreases are slightly less steep. This has to do with what we call fixed and variable costs. Variable costs are those that can be adjusted based upon available funds and ministry priorities of the denomination. Fixed costs, on the other hand, are those expenses that are mandated by the Book of Discipline and cannot be changed significantly without changes to the Book of Discipline or other action by the General Conference. Here you can see the breakout of these fixed and variable costs. Variable costs account for about 83% of the quadrennial budget, and the fixed costs account for 17%. When we refer to fixed costs, we are only referring to the costs associating with holding the General Conference, support of the Judicial Council, and the support of our bishops. You can see the costs of these three areas here. The costs of General Conference are largely determined by the number of delegates, how long they meet, and where they're coming from. The costs of the episcopacy are driven by the number of bishops and where they are serving. In each case, only General Conference can take action that impacts these drivers. Each jurisdictional bishop costs about $1.5 million per quadrennium. And each central conference bishop costs $750,000 per quadrennium. To meet at General Conference for 2 weeks, each jurisdictional delegate costs the General Administration Fund $1,825. And each delegate from outside of the United States costs about $5,275 to attend. Here's why fixed and variable costs are important to remember. If General Conference decides to change some of the ways that we allocate the $603 million among the various ministry opportunities, the impact of those decisions will only impact the variable portion of the budget, and that means changes. Changes that will impact the ministries of our church currently conducted by our agencies. If the bottom line budget remains at $603 million, any changes will impact only the 83% of the quadrennial budget. Of course, the General Conference can raise or lower the $603 million budget. Keep in mind, for every, we'll use $60 million added or deleted from the budget, your average annual conference will see a $272,000 change in your total apportionment, averaging at about $449 per church. We will be giving you updates, and you can find update and additional budget resources on our website at www.gcfa.org/gc2012. GCFA staff will monitor the action of the General Conference over the 2 weeks and provide regular updates on how the budget is shaping up. Daily updates will be available in the Daily Christian Advocate, and up-to-the-minute updates will be found on our Twitter feed and our Facebook page. And now to talk about our legislation, I'm turning our conversation back over to John.
GCFA has submitted 43 petitions to the 2000 General Conference. I know that for all of those of you who like the Book of Discipline as much as I do and rewriting it, that you'd love me to read all of those petitions. However, for the sake of time and to prevent you from going completely to sleep, I'll just highlight a few of the petitions. The full text of all of our petitions is found on our website at www.gcfa.org for GC 2012. What I'll be doing here is describing a few specific paragraphs with changes. I encourage you to take a look at all of the paragraphs of particular interest. Take a look at the legislation on our site. GCFA is submitting two constitutional amendments to paragraph 16. These came from our Apportionment Structure Study Committee, which was a referral from the previous General Conference. They made a number of recommendations to the Council regarding the structure of the apportioned funds, the formula for apportioning them, and the ability of the Church to make changes to its budget and ministry priorities between sessions of the General Conference. Paragraph 16.8 authorizes the General Conference to delegate power to a subordinate body to make changes to the programmatic life of the Church between sessions of the General Conference. In 1970, the Judicial Council ruled it unconstitutional for General Conference to delegate its authority in this way. This amendment would give General Conference the ability to make a delegation, but it does not specify the body or manner in which this power can be exercised. Paragraph 16.9 authorizes the General Conference to delegate power to a subordinate body to make changes to the apportioned budgets of the Church between sessions of the General Conference and mirrors our amendment to 16.8. Just remember that all constitutional amendments require a two-thirds majority of General Conference delegates voting, and then all of the annual conferences voting have to also approve those by a two-thirds majority. 10 of the 11 general agencies receiving general church funds are submitting legislation to reduce the size of their boards. GCFA is one of them. Our proposal would reduce our board from 40 members to 21, elected by the General Conference, with two bishops, 11 persons from the jurisdictional conferences, three from the central conferences, and five others nominated by GCFA for special knowledge and experience. We are submitting this legislation not in the hopes of saving money, but to enhance the effectiveness of our oversight and decision-making. GCFA has established a Conference Chancellors Association to provide a forum for sharing information and concerns of mutual interest to help prevent adverse legal actions that could impact parts of our connectional church. GCFA is proposing to clarify our existing mandate to oversee and enhance the efficiency of operating systems in the denomination. Our legislation for paragraph 811.2 provides more specificity and clarity for areas where GCFA can withhold funding from work that presents an unnecessary duplication of effort. Our legislation for paragraph 404.2 simplifies the process for changing the number of bishops in a jurisdiction based upon the number of members within the region. Under the current system, a jurisdiction must fall at least 10% below the threshold stated in the Book of Discipline before the General Conference can determine if it is time to reduce the number of bishops. Under the proposal, the 10% provision is removed, although General Conference will still determine actual reductions. GCFA's legislation on paragraph 404.2 also removes a provision that mandates that any savings in the reduction of episcopal areas in the jurisdictions must go towards the creation of new episcopal areas in the central conferences. Although GCFA does not debate the need to create additional episcopal areas where need exists, each general conference should retain the right to determine when need exists within the financial capacity of the church to support additional bishops. GCFA has resubmitted a petition submitted in 2008 regarding the evaluation of bishops. In response to an affirmation of the call to action, we believe this legislation, which allows the jurisdictional committees on episcopacy to involve the Council of Bishops in assisting them to ensure effective episcopal leadership, is a necessary step in enhancing accountability at all levels of the connection. Yes, if you want more, the details on our legislation are at our website. So I'll turn it back to Moses.
Thank you, John and Pat. I'm going to invite Bishop Davis and Don House to come to the podium. And Bishop Davis is our president for our General Council of Finance Administration. He has done a great leadership and a great support to our agency. So I want to thank him. And Don House is the lead person for our economic advisory group. So anything regarding the budget, he'll also be glad to answer you. So I'm going to turn over to you, and you could go ahead.
Thank you. In my previous life, when I worked as an editor for a newspaper, in one of my roles was a business editor, and I discovered that the best way to understand the budget, any budget process, is to ask as many questions as you can. That time is upon us. It's time for questions. As our tradition, please state your name, your conference connection, before you ask your question. Questions? Wow. Over there.
Yes. Steve Zekoff, clergy delegate from Wisconsin. I fibbed to my good friend John when I told him I wouldn't ask him a question. We tend to be pretty conservative, John, when it comes to making big changes in our structures. So my question for you is, if the proposals to reduce the size of the general agencies all pass, that they're bringing in themselves, to reduce the size of 10 of those 11 agencies, what would be the difference in the size of the governing boards overall? Do you understand my question, or don't you know the answer?
Just repeat the last part of your question.
Well, you shared with us that 10 of the 11 general agencies receiving general church funds are coming in with their own proposals to reduce their board sizes.
Okay.
So if we look at what the current total board sizes are of those boards, what would that number be, and what would the new number be if all 10 of those proposals were passed?
I believe when I tallied it, there were 569 members currently on the general agencies, at least the general agencies receiving general church funds and the connectional table. The proposals that we have seen reduce that number approximately in half.
Yes, Jay. Sorry, Steve Jobs.
Jay Graham, Southwest Texas Conference Lay Delegate. We had a question this morning about preparation for general conference and concerns about whether or not delegates would be surprised with some numbers, and I reassured them that GCFA would have those numbers ready and that we were working on that, but it would probably be better to come from y'all if you could apprise the delegations here about the work that's being done to be ready to address changes that might come out of either call to action or these other petitions.
Yeah, I will answer, then I will turn it to Don House and Bishop Davis on that too to add any more. As of now, we have a budget for $603 million. That's what is the bottom line is approved by Connectional Table and the General Council of Finance and Administration. We're also going to meet on March the 5th, the Economic Advisory Group, to review our predictions, because as Don would explain more about that. And then we, GCFA is going to meet with again with Connectional Table to review the process and say, hey, is our prediction okay, 603, or we stick with this, or we want to change it. So we will still, we have one more chance to look at it, and by first week of March, we would know where we stand. Don, you want to answer that?
Jay, I'm not sure I understand the question. What we are doing with the 603.1 is merely projecting a number that we believe is the right number to strike the balance between spending at the annual conference and spending at the general church. The proposals, the connectional table, the IoT proposal and call to action proposal is really for a complete restructuring. But I'm not sure how that would affect the 603. As I understand the current rules of the game, we will apportion the 603 according to the apportionment formula and the strength of the economy as it changes. That is, we're more of the collection agency. The call to action is really looking at the spending side. And I don't see it flowing back through the collection side until you get another general conference. So I guess I think maybe your question is on the spending side. The collection side would remain unaffected, as I understand it.
I suspect that we have a few of our first elected delegates who have not been to general conference or have been at a level where they didn't get to be involved in the process as much to understand how GCFA works during the progress of a general conference and the review of petitions that have financial implications. What I was hoping was that y'all could reassure them about the readiness of both staff and GCFA and the connectional table to address all these changes as they come, so that delegates who are not in possession of all the information that GCFA has and connectional table will receive that information in a homogenized form that will allow everybody to absorb it and feel confident that they're making decisions that will be paid for.
Thank you. Next time, please. Let's We are not debating issues. We are asking questions. Please try to phrase your
question. Yeah. I think it was a question,
yes.
And I think I understand it better now. I'm a little bit slow. What I think Jay is meaning is that when we are at General Conference, you will see a publication that has the 603.1. That is what is going to be published. That will be in your advanced DCA. What Jay is saying is, let's say as legislation moves on, and let's say as we as delegates pass legislation that has budgetary implications, then it will go to GCFA as it meets during General Conference. GCFA will review that new legislation, whether it be the call to action or anything else that has budgetary implications, and then GCFA will make a recommendation back to General Conference for final consideration. General Conference then, with this revised number, whether up or down, will then either refine it or accept it. So the 603.1 is merely the starting point. And as new legislation is passed that has budgetary implications, it may be higher than 603.1, it may be lower than 603.1. We don't know. That would be in the hands of us as delegates. But I think that's what Jay is saying, and I think GCFA will be ready for those recommendations and that legislation that comes in. And they will probably have already done a lot of homework ahead of time. That is, we pretty much know, at least through these presentations, we all know the major components of the call to action recommendation. In fact, it's already in legislation. And we may have a hint from discussions here formally and maybe in the hallways of what kind of amendments might be coming to that legislation. And we might have, as we get there, a pretty clear idea of which way it's going. We will be in the hallways at General Conference and listening what is happening in those legislative committees. So we will hear it moving and evolving as it goes, and GCFA will have to be hearing it, that as well. But when the final legislation is made, it won't be passed completely. It will be passed and then referred to GCFA. During General Conference, GCFA will review it and come back and let you know what the budgetary implications are so you can give a final approval. And I think that's what Jay was asking.
Now, if I could add, the non-delegate members of GCFA and, by the way, the non-delegate members of the Connectional Table will be at the site of General Conference and will be prepared to work on all of these potential issues as the week and a few days go along. A lot of our GCFA members and a number of the CT members are delegates, and so they're in legislative committees, not able to necessarily do this work. But we have a number of non-delegate persons who will be working collaboratively together. And that's the way we've done things in the past. And so there's a lot of conversation that goes back and forth. And you can't really predict, obviously, those of you who've been to General Conference, we always get surprised that you can't really predict all of the proposals and legislation pieces that will come to us. But we'll be ready, along with a really great staff, to crunch the numbers and let people see what those things would look like. So that, I mean, our primary goal is to give as much information to the delegates as possible so that they can make the best decisions possible. And so that we have kind of a servant role there that we try to fulfill.
Thank you. Any right here?
Ann Travis, lay member from Holston Conference. I want to go back to the piece you showed right at the end about the role of GCFA in the effectiveness of bishops. And I wonder if you can speak to why that was given to GCFA, and how do you envision your role in that process?
I'll speak to that. It's not a role of GCFA. That is for the jurisdictional committees on the episcopacy. It's a modification to a paragraph about the role and responsibility of that group. GCFA is not involved in that review of the bishops. It's solely for the Jurisdictional Committee on the Episcopacy. What it is to enable them to share the information outside of their Jurisdictional Committee on the Episcopacy with the Council of Bishops to help enable the Council of Bishops to deal with accountability of all of the bishops.
Let's have that question over here and then we'll come back to you.
Cynthia Astle, Communicator, United Methodist Insight. I want to thank this session because you've given me some information that I did not have before. And it's this. John mentioned that 10 of the 11 boards and agencies are submitting legislation to effectively cut the sizes of their boards in half. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. As I understand it, one of the purposes of the call to action is to derive greater efficiencies and less expense by eliminating the size of boards of directors. Now, if the boards and agencies are already coming in with these proposals to reduce the size of their boards, presumably for greater effectiveness and less expense, why is the GCFA supporting the call to action when it would diminish your standing as a board or agency with direct relationship to the general conference? I'm confused, basically. I don't know why you're, you know, with these other alternatives on the boards from the boards and agencies, why GCFA has given its support to the radical proposal of the call to action?
Well, GCFA has not voted on the call to action. And so
I've misunderstood something. Yeah. It was my understanding that some of the legislation that's being brought forth is in support of the connectional table call to action report. Is that correct?
You want to respond to that, Moses?
Yeah.
The only legislation that we're proposing that would be in support of that are the two constitutional amendments. That was a result of the Apportionment Structure Study Group, which was a referral from the 2008 General Conference to look at funding for the General Church. Some of the members of the connectional table, including some of the, at least one individual who's in this room, who was involved with the call to action proposal, they were advocates for that because there was a response to the 2009 recession, that there is not the ability of the General Church to respond to these changes, emergencies, and therefore their recommendation or suggestion was that there needs to be the ability for flexibility between sessions of General Conference to change. Right now, the only flexibility that exists is for general agencies to reduce their expenditures and thereby save money relative to the apportionments that are coming in, because local churches and annual conferences, if they don't get the money, don't send it in to us. So there is that flexibility to respond to reduced income. If there are new opportunities that come forth during the quadrennium, GCFA has what are called contingency funds to respond to those emergencies. And that has happened in the past. There are also opportunities for GCFA and the connectional table in consultation with the Council of Bishops to make special appeals to deal with emergencies. So there are mechanisms now to deal with emergencies, but not to reallocate the General Church budget between sessions of General Conference.
Just to recap, just before you all leave this place, GCFA has not endorsed the IoT report. Just, I want to make it very clear here. Because the boards and agencies were working independently, wanted to reduce, and they did it by themselves. It's not because of what somebody told them, but they wanted to increase the efficiency and also reduce the administrative overhead cost, and that's why they did it independently. So none of the agencies have endorsed the IoT report at all.
Well, the bishop had a question, and then
in the connectional table, there's a
name, please.
Oh, John Hopkins, the chair of the connectional table, bishop in East Ohio. Thank you, sir. In the connectional table, a lot of people still think we're the General Council on Ministries, but we're not responsible for the program agencies alone. We're responsible for the annual conferences as well. And in that dialogue, we've learned that part of the problem with the general church budget is how it affects the local congregations and the annual conference. One of the things we've discovered, first of all, is that of the $603 million that's being proposed, 10% of that is to make up for the shortfall of annual conferences that do not pay in full. Do you understand that? But in order to have the receipts we need to run the church, 10% of that $603,000 is added to make up for the shortfall of conferences. We also learned that less than 23% of our annual conferences paid in full, 23% paid in full in 2010. And we also learned that the average annual conference in the U.S. that's paying this apportionment, they send about 26% of what they collect from their churches onto the general church. And in one meeting I was at, somebody said, if you're in your annual conference, if you had only 23% of your churches paying in full, you would be in trouble. And if any of your churches were sending 26% of what they collect onto the general church or the annual conference, you'd be in trouble. So part of the problem we have is the balance between the two. And I got a question that's coming, I understand. But GCFA is established by General Conference to watch over the general church budget. Active bishops, and I'm speaking personally, feel responsible for the general church budget, but also we see responsibility for the annual conference. Finally, the connectional table is required by discipline to consult with the Council of Bishops about everything it does. It's in the discipline. Told us we have to consult with the Council of Bishops. We did that on the budget. Bishop Davis was there. The question is, what did the Council of Bishops feel about the 603 and what was their conversation?
Well, my best recollection was that the Council of Bishops they understood the 603, but were open to a reduction of some additional reduction from that 603. Is that fair representation? We got the president down here. I mean, is that fair? Okay.
Yes. 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 No.
I'm Laura Easto from Baltimore, Washington, and I appreciate all that you have said. And there are times that, though I have been a part of this denomination my entire life, I think we still speak in code. And so forgive me for that opinion, because I did not understand your answer to the question that was raised about how that last slide, you had me until that last slide where your recommendation talked about the effectiveness of bishops, and I think the question was well articulated, but I
can
didn't,
we put that slide up?
Yeah, I didn't hear. I heard you say that it really is about empowering the jurisdictional episcopacy committees, but I don't understand why that piece of legislation is coming from GCFA, which I think is what the question was, but I'm not sure. Right. So why from you all if I understood everything, but maybe I didn't understand everything that you said about what your responsibilities were.
Sure.
GCFA has the responsibility for administering the Episcopal Fund. And within our responsibilities, we look at all sections of the Book of Discipline, especially paragraphs related to the Conference Council on Finance and Administration, the Trust Clause, fair process, all of those things. But we also look at that, and part of our dialogue in the 2004 General Conference was about the growth in the Episcopal Fund, which was growing faster than any of the other general apportioned funds. And we proposed legislation to change the formula for the number of bishops and presented that to the 2004 General Conference. That was not supported, but it was part of the task force to study the episcopacy. And GCFA is the group, as I say, that administers the Episcopal Fund. We have the data on the Episcopal Fund. Why we supported that is because we are concerned about the effectiveness of the bishops, because people talk to us about that. People want the legislation submitted. We ask for input from annual conferences about legislation that they want to have submitted. I don't recall if that particular legislation was brought forward by an annual conference.
Okay, so that's my follow-up question. You've just opened the door, which is to say, did that come from someplace else to the GCFNA, and then you brought it forward as a petition?
That is my recollection, that we brought it forward because someone, well, I know that for a fact now that I think back about that. That's four years ago, I'm sorry. Yes, it was brought forward by somebody in our constituency who said this issue needs to be raised because it's not being addressed. So we brought that legislation forward on behalf of that group, whoever that was, which I'd have to go back and check.
Okay. Thank you.
We have room for maybe one or two questions. We'll go this way, then we'll come to you, Greg.
Michelle Whitaker, agency staff, General Board of Church and Society. There are two petitions you're bringing related to efficiency and operations and the database. Are those changing all of the databases that the agencies will be using?
No. Mitch?
I guess the short answer is no. Both in the databases and the other piece of legislation that you mentioned, we do acknowledge, as I think all the general agencies would acknowledge, that there is duplication, there's replication, redundancy, and those aren't the most cost-effective ways. Actually, in the discipline now, it actually says we could withhold funds. We have not done that, but we could. It's kind of putting a little more teeth into that to saying, okay, folks, we've got to work together to be more efficient, to serve the annual conferences. I mean, this is the constant, you know, hearing people putting in data, five agencies asking them for the same thing. So we're trying to put a little more teeth into what is already existent. And I think that's
So it would be one universal system that we would use for not only all the contact information, but even sending out communications? Or how? I'm just trying to understand how that affects the current systems, because there are several different systems that agencies are using or planning to use, and how's that changing?
GCFA already collects the clergy data and the church data, and so especially actually maybe because we've waited long enough to do this, technology has made it pretty easy to actually have something in what we call in the cloud, and we're talking about this is going to be like a data warehouse.
Okay.
It's not saying at your agency or at any agency you wouldn't have your own particular data, but for that common data, name, address, rank, serial number, you know, it's going to be in one place. And basically what's going to happen and how we're envisioning it, and we're working with all the agencies and a group of annual conferences. We have a data advisory team right now working on this that basically – you know, the information will come, because the information comes from the annual conferences, it will be transmitted to the database, and then agencies and others, so permitted, can access it.
Okay.
So we're really trying to enhance what's going on now, make it easier, and make it real time. A lot of our data you might see is, you know, is older or we're based. We're trying to get things, if the dream is if a clergy person moves and that annual conference reports that to us, that someone could find that out the next day.
But just this is my last kind of follow-up with it. The agencies would still be able to maintain their own database if they're also reaching out and...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, let me see. Yes. That is going to be our last question, unless somebody has a very pressing question.
Greg Nelson, Oregon, Idaho Conference Director of Communications. Pat, I want to go back to your excellent discussion on fixed and variable costs, but I honestly don't understand why the Episcopal Fund was not reduced the same, and that that was the argument for it, because much of that is salary, and salary, in my understanding, is variable. Just as when the agencies were told, plan for a 6% cut, some of those cuts represent salary and staffing. You know, we just gone through the painful process of reducing the number of bishops in our jurisdictional areas, and we're not quite done with that process, and how that's handled, yet we don't see that cut. The revenue that came from the bishops taking the lower salary from 1 year should have carried over in the fund. Why was that fund not able to drop in that same 6% way?
In regard to, since John has much more expertise than me on the Episcopal Fund in particular, I'm going to give this to him, not to, you know, avoid you, Greg. Thank you.
I'll respond to the last part. First, when the bishops, the jurisdictional bishops, froze their salary for 1 year, in the year following that, the increase in their salary offset the fact of the decrease for the 1 year. So there was no savings over the course of the quadrennium, except for the fact that this year the salary increase that the GCFA approved was 2.2%, which is lower than originally projected for the quadrennium. So there are cost controls put in place. The key driver for the Episcopal Fund is the number of active bishops. And unless and until the General Conference acts in 2012 to make those reductions of the three episcopal areas in the jurisdictions effective in 2012, we had to project a budget based on 49 active jurisdictional bishops for the next quadrennium. If that is reduced, then there are potential savings from that, which would increase, well, would further decrease the apportions for the Episcopal Fund. But we have to budget going into General Conference with the current configuration until the General Conference acts. And just for your information, because there was a lot of confusion around this, the current paragraph in the Book of Discipline around jurisdictional bishops says that even if the Interjurisdictional Committee on Episcopacy meets at General Conference and recommends the reduction does not have to occur until 2016 unless the General Conference or those jurisdictions make it effective in 2012. So at sometime during that second week of General Conference, when the decisions are made, then we will roll that into the budget proposal.
Thank you.
Last question.
James Sally, Delegate, South Carolina, standing here now. My question has to do with the fixed costs, specifically the educational funds and the distribution. Are you planning to bring any kind of legislation that will change the current way that those fixed costs are distributed or charged there? If you understand what I'm asking.
I don't think we are bringing any legislation regarding that. They're not bringing in legislation. Just say that.
Remains the same.
Sorry?
It remains the same.
Yeah, it remains the same.
As it is in this current quadrant.
Yeah. The key to it is what John was trying to say. We can't put a budget together what is going to happen in the General Conference. We have to put a budget as is now, the status quo. Then we develop the budget. Sometimes, you know, people ask, well, oh, this was talked about IoT. Did it not change it? And said, we can't, you know, unless it's debated. And the General Conference, because we directly report to the General Conference, and what the General Conference tells us is when we change the direction.
Thank you, John. I'll ask the General Secretary if he has final words, and then we'll close this session.
Well, I want to thank you all for patiently listening to us. I want to quote some words from Charles Tindley. He's a dear person in my life. And being in Philadelphia area for 23 years, I like some of the statements he does and some of the songs that he wrote. When the world is tossing me like a ship upon the sea, thou who rulest wind and water, stand by me. During the days and seasons ahead and the months that we're going to face, let us stand firm with our faith that God is in control. No matter how tossed by investment reports or debates or Wall Street or European markets crashing down or rating downgrades, we may feel it. The one who rules the wind and water will abide. Thank you.